welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, and please rate and review the program. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Raptors are in the midst of locker room cleanout, so we've already heard from Kelly Olynyk. We will hear from pretty much all your favorite Raptors players today. Scotty Barnes at 12:30. That's what I'm hoping to wrap up the show and scoot over to the Raptors practice facility so I can get there in time to hear what Scotty says. Darko is scheduled to be, tomorrow?
Unofficially.
Okay, yeah. Well, Darko and Masai scheduled to speak later this week unofficially. Blake, how you doing, man? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Good weekend. Not the best basketball. And I don't mean that just about the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors obviously had two not competitive losses to the Miami Heat over the weekend. Here's a quick one for you.
Oh, yeah?
Who led the Raptors in scoring yesterday?
That's a great question. Grady had it going. Man, I did a whole React pod, and I watched this whole game. And it was just yesterday, and it was at 1 p.m. too, so it's actually less than 24 hours ago.
So, Gary had a game high 18.
Yeah.
But that's how,
Gary had a slow first half, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he just snuck in at the end there, and yeah, him and Hawkes and Thomas Bryant all had 18 points.
All I remember from yesterday's game was one last Jalen McDaniels disaster class in the fourth quarter. My goodness, man. I already did it.
So the only thing that really stood out to me mm-hmm. was Garrett Temple drawing a charge to end his season,
which
I thought was really nice. But with respect to McDaniels, I don't really like box plus minus as a stat. Like when you get under the hood, it's not like the best stat in the world or whatever. But among all Raptors ever to play 300 minutes, it's the worst season in Raptors history by box plus minus.
What it felt like with the eye test too.
A lot of that is team context, obviously. Like the Raptors on a per minute basis, 11 of the 40 worst seasons in team history by plus minus happened this year. Like it's just it's team context. But I did pull that one for you. That BPM is it's one of those stats where like I only care about it when it agrees with what I'm seeing.
Yeah, for sure.
And in this case, yeah, BPM's good today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, he is under contract for next year. I don't think he'll be speaking at locker room cleanouts. I think he might just clean his locker and go home type of deal. But we will get to some of those quotes as they come in. But first, for the first segment, I really wanted to look at just the season from like a 30,000-foot view. I don't even know where this phrase even came from. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's like a whatever. In any case, just look at it from the top down.
I assume it's a farming thing.
Really?
Yeah. 30, like you look at like, I don't know, you look at your corn. And then, like, you zoom out. I don't know, man. What? I'm just picturing being in a plane.
It was, like, in a plane or something.
Yeah, well, I'm picturing being in a plane, and you drive over, like, I don't know if you've flown to cities for games. Yeah. You're flying over. You see, like, all the farmland, like, all parceled out and everything.
Okay.
I don't know why it went to farm. It's the only thing I noticed out the plane window. It's the only thing I've ever looked at from 30,000 feet.
There really is a lot of that, especially across Canada, as you fly to places like Vancouver from Toronto. But in any case, yeah, we are going to take a 30,000-foot view and just look at the season. Because obviously, over the course of the year, we're doing daily shows. We're looking at, like, the nitty-gritty of this and this. But I just want to step back and ask some more general questions about this season. Starting with number one. Blake Murphy, what was the point of this season?
The point of this season was so if we're going back to the start of the season and what the point is from the perspective of the Raptors front office, it was to figure out which direction was the right direction to take. Now, you and I have talked about a lot, and fans have felt that should have been clear before then. But from the Raptors' perspective, this season was about figuring out which direction was the right direction to take and executing that decision directionally. They did that, and then after that the point of the season became very like individual development. Find out if this is a guy who's sticking around. I guess it's tough, and I want to kick it back to you to ask you what you thought the point of the season was, because I really do think it was for them figure out which direction makes sense, execute that direction. But that's tough as an explanation for me, because I feel like you should have been there by then.
Yeah, I think the point of the season, when you look back on it, to take it away from the snarkiness of it, which is like, what was the point of the season? I really do mean it on its face value. The point of the season was to pivot, starting with the coaching change that took place in the offseason, with Nick Nurse getting out the door and Darko Rajakovic coming in, starting with the fact that Fred VanVleet walks in free agency, Pascal gets traded, OG gets traded, you know, even guys like Chris Boucher, who probably could have played and contributed this season from day one, was out the rotation. And, you know, even from minor moves like that, they moved on from everybody in the older core, and they're trying to bring a new identity. I mean, basically, it's just Scotty and Gary who are kind of holdovers from the last few years. Jakob, I kind of count as part of that changeover, given that he was only here for half a season last year. But that was the point of this year. They wanted to pivot. And, you know, even at that time when it was like, we're hiring Darko, but you can't just say at the start of the season, like, we're intending to lose and we're intending to do this. And nor does it really benefit your leverage. But at the same time, like, when you look back on it, it makes perfect sense. You put a rookie coach in a new situation who's all about development, and you pivot towards a young group.
Would you say then, and we could do the positives of the season as well and the biggest successes, but the biggest complicating factor of the season then was that we spent 30, 35 games with this incongruence between what you're saying the point was and that pivot, and the fact that there were certain elements of that still open?
Yeah, I mean, yes or no. I think, you know, the start of the season, for example, I think Pascal was kind of embodied this whole structure, right? The struggle where it was like at the start of the year, he got off to that really slow start and it looked like there were no opportunities for him to play his game. And I think that culminated in that one Sixers game where he only took 8 shots and 5 of them were threes, which is obviously not how you would use Pascal. And it was a total departure from what it was before that as well. And of course, all this came against the backdrop of like what Masai said and, you know, essentially linking the idea of selfishness in a question responding to what Pascal, maybe not directly saying it. But in any case, like, it didn't feel like Darko had the greatest idea of how to use him and had a bigger idea of how do I get my system into this group. It didn't fit that team at that time, but as the trades have happened, it's fit more and more, at least the offensive side of that system. So I think Pascal is like himself embodies that sort of incongruency, and then that's why ultimately he got moved as well.
There's also had to have been an element for Darko, and really like this it kind of bleeds into the whole roster and things like that, but and I can't imagine when Darko speaks you could ask him this. Like, I don't know if you could thread the needle on asking this because he's going to be so polite about Pascal and he's not going to be negative about the front office and stuff. But if you are Darko and you're trying to figure out who fits and things like that, and you have a good sense Pascal's getting traded at some point, mm-hmm. you know, what is the priority level working him in?
Right. Although, having said that, though, he wasn't getting traded, like, in the first month of the season. And he eventually became, like, their most efficient scorer, the most prominent scorer. And for a while there, we didn't see an extended stretch with Pascal and Scotty, but I thought they actually played really well together this season mm-hmm. as well. Whatever. Obviously, that was going to move on, but at least Darko figured out over the course of the year how to use Pascal. And honestly, it got a pretty efficient season out of him, too. Mm-hmm. Didn't really change the bottom line, but yeah, I mean, the point of the season was to pivot. So now that they have pivoted, the next question, do you feel better about the long-term picture of this team as compared to where they were coming into the year?
I do. I feel better about the long-term picture because there is that clarity of direction, and that makes me more confident in how they're going to execute this plan from here. So what I mean by that is they have less talent right now mm-hmm. than they have before. You rewind to post-trade deadline last year, and I know there were injuries and fit stuff, but on paper, that team had a lot more talent than this current team. So maybe you feel better about that. They were also at a pretty big pick deficit still. Mm-hmm. They didn't have financial flexibility. And something that I think we're seeing on this roster now, the front office, their challenge this offseason is to fix this and take a step forward. But you saw the cost of trying to do both directions at once. And that is, there is a player development cost to that. Like, obviously, when Nick gets let go, Darko gets brought in, so much of that conversation was about we have to develop while we're winning, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there's also a roster building cost where when you are constantly trying to do both, you know, there are only so many roster spots. There are only so many minutes to give. There's only so much money, et cetera. So if you are making win now moves, it's harder to execute player development moves or win later moves. So I think that clarity of direction will give them, you know, again, maybe they don't, you know, you don't get a free agent as good as OG or Pascal or Fred because OG and Pascal are the top two free agents available.
Right.
But the fact that you know where you're going and what the timeline is and who the core pieces you need to build around are, I feel better about that. And I feel better about this front office getting back to their ability to execute their vision, which they didn't you know, they struggled with the last couple of off seasons and trade deadlines before this one, because I think because there was this, well, A, flexibility is the most important thing because we don't know what direction we want. And also we're trying to do too many things at once. So I feel better about it in that respect. Can you get there as well, even though they're maybe a little, they're maybe, not maybe, they're less talented right now than they were at locker cleanout day last year?
Yeah, I think there's the more intangible question is like, what is the team culture? What's an identity? I'll ask you about that in a second. But yeah, I mean, when you come into the last year, at the start of the season, it was like your options were to keep the group together, and you know OG was going to get really expensive and Pascal's going to get really expensive. And if you re-sign both of those guys, you basically have to dash the other pieces that you have on the roster, and you're probably going to be in luxury tax territory. So, you know, that already was not ideal coming into it. As you mentioned, the pick deficit, now they made the Pascal trade. They do get more firsts in there. They're not the highest quality firsts, right? But at the same time, like, at least they restocked and gave themselves a couple more chips to play with, or just pieces that they can use to draft talent with. Hopefully they do get back to that, like, being really strong in the draft. And, you know, I think part of the reason why the Raptors fell off in that regard is they didn't have good picks either. Like, you can't always expect to you know, hit grand slams when you're bunting, essentially, with, like, second-round picks. Like, you know what I mean? Like, 46 and 47 are just bunts. You know, if you get a single, you're thrilled, right? You move the base runner along, your throat. Sorry, I'm just appealing to the baseball side.
Yeah, you got Jays tickets this week. We know.
Oh, I can't wait to see them bunt tomorrow. They probably don't. But in any case, like, you do have some first-round picks, and I think the cost of that, obviously, is you've taken away some really, really good players who maybe weren't the sum of their parts, maybe a little bit less than the sum of their parts, but at the same time, really good players. And I think that those players really did carry along an identity for the group. And I feel like right now the Raptors don't have an identity, and I'm wondering what that identity is going to be and who's going to carry that for this group.
Well, I'll answer the second part first. And okay, it's going to be Scottie Barnes that carries that identity, because okay, show me a team that's had an identity over the history of basketball where the star didn't embody that identity, right? Like, Heat culture over the last couple of years is it's Jimmy Butler first. Lakers exceptionalism, it's LeBron James first.
Yeah.
You know, the Celtics not being really good, but you're still not all the way buying in. Jason Tatum embodies that. No, but in seriousness, like, it's going to be Scottie Barnes. And
yeah, okay,
I think the easiest way to merge what they want culturally with Scottie Barnes is on the court, where they want to play this kind of free-flowing style where it's a lot about passing and it's a lot about making people around you better and playing, I guess, to Joe Wolfson's latest piece and our conversation with him last week, something that is not uncommon anymore, mm-hmm, but is still not the norm. They want to play that way. So I think on court, you know, Scottie can really embody the way that they want to play. They want dynamic players. They want dynamic attack from different situations. They want to be difficult to play against and difficult to game plan for. And I think Scottie, as a 6'9" guy who can bully just about anyone in the post, but also hit a pull-up three and pass out of the high post and the elbows extended and things like that, he can be that. Now, defensive identity-wise, I have a lot of questions still. I know we did that on Friday, so I won't repeat it there. And then I think more like culturally, and this is getting to know Darko a little bit, this is trying to read into Masai's comments, this is thinking back to, you know, the 2014 to 2018 run, what they valued culturally. I really do think it is they would like to get back to, not that they even got away from this, but really a team focus, kind of, you know, sacrifice for your brother, sacrifice for the person next to you. Mm-hmm. You know, if one of us is going to eat, we all get to eat. And that was something that Kyle and DeMar's leadership, even though Kyle could be prickly publicly sometimes, their leadership and Dwayne Casey at the helm, honestly, before Nick, really installed this culture of togetherness and of, hey, and again, back to the superstar representing that culture, Kyle being the best player on the team, but never being the top scorer, maybe not getting the most accolades and things like that. So I think they would like to get back to that culturally. That is a lot. That's a lot less tangible, though, than the offensive and defensive identity, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we talk so much about culture. I mean, realistically, the culture is the people you have in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these people, it's the famous Drake line. I know way too many Raptors who are here that I didn't know last year.
Yeah.
You know, who the, you know, are y'all. But, like, that's why the culture has changed. Too many people have left. And we saw how big of a culture piece losing Kyle was. And I think in many ways, they're still trying to replace that. Maybe they try to like shoehorn Fred into that. That didn't really work out. I guess even right now in this conversation, we're kind of shoehorning Scotty into that. You kind of have to let them grow and mature into themselves. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, with Scotty, we've seen so much talent. We've seen, even lately, his activity around the team, the bench, you know, he's talking and all that kind of stuff. That's all really good. And I know it sounds kind of like minor right now, because who cares if he's talking to people if they're losing by 50 every night? Well, not 50, sorry, 20. But those are the steps that need to be taking place as well, because, you know, I think with Scotty, there's more maturation to be done in addition to all that he's done this year. And I think he's taken a big step this year as compared to previous years. RJ, I really like what he's been and sort of how he's represented himself both on and off the court. And same thing with Quickly as well. So, like, I do feel like there's something there, but there needs to be more time for them to grow. And whoever ends up, not to say that they're the three of them competing for, like, it's like succession or something, but, like, whoever does take control of the team, I'm just waiting to see who that person is going to be. I think we would all ideally like it to be Scotty, but there's a personality piece that comes with that as well. And when it happens, I think the team will actually start to play more together, play more, you know, hold each other accountable. I'm not necessarily looking for the vibes after they win. Who cares? Like, everyone's happy after a win. We played a media game and we were thrilled after we won. But it's the vibes after a loss, you know, like holding each other accountable, staying together with connecting in the group, but holding each other accountable. And those are the things that happen behind the scenes that you realistically can't get like a full picture of unless you're in that room. But yeah, I mean, so what is that identity going to be, though? Like, offensively, do we have an identity? Defensively, do we have an identity?
Offensively, I think they're on their way.
Okay.
I think that, look, it hasn't been super effective because they haven't had guys around, right? They haven't had pieces. But even when things were rough, and like really rough statistically, like we were 15, 16 games into the season, and I dropped that stat when we were doing nice noise, whatever, about how their half-court offense was the worst since the Process 76ers. Right. And that was like a good chunk of games into the season. But one of the kind of silver linings we took from that was at least they're sticking to it. Like, they are, you know, yes, they would peel off and, hey, Scotty and Pascal, you got to take it in the post because we need a bucket right now. And that's our only path to scoring efficiently while we figure this stuff out. And then you fast forward and, like, Kelly Olynyk is getting 10 and 11 and 12 assists in a game. And that's mostly because there's nobody else on the floor that they really trusted to create baskets for other people. But you also see a rise in the amount of cuts that they're running, both finishing plays and just off-ball cuts in general. Mm-hmm. The comfort level with Gary in the offense and how he's operating second side stuff and the different things he can do off of those pin downs. Grady emerging. And the shots never really ended up dropping above the break, but using him more dynamically around those things.
Sure.
You know, even things like Quickly and RJ looking good in the system and Quickly finding ways, you know, by the end of the, and again, he missed the last couple games, but by the end of the season, they're finding more ways into the paint, even if it's not right to the rim, you know, getting in there a little bit, having a 10, 12, 14 free throw game.
Yeah. Having like an 18 assist game. I think he was only averaging like 8 assists when he was with the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, his role was different, but yeah.
Yeah, so all of those things are positive. So I think offensive identity-wise, now the hardest part is that, well, so much of the entire last quarter of the season was played without Scotty. Mm-hmm. However, Scotty fits the system, right? Part of why is Scotty's the player that they're building around, and he has that level of dynamism and versatility offensively. So I don't know that they're going to run exactly this same system next year. Some of that's going to be personnel dependent and stuff.
For sure.
But I do think that, like, offensively, a system where you're playing through your bigs in the high post a little bit more, where you're trusting a guy like Scotty to initiate at the point, even if he's more nominally a four for you defensively, like, that's going to be the identity. How confident are you that, you know, you drop Scotty back in there, you add a piece or two in free agency, that they can build on that, because they are the 25th offense in basketball, and it was trending slightly in the right direction until the personnel fell off down the stretch here. How confident are you that if that is the identity, that it can be a better version of it next year?
Okay, I think number one of the biggest questions is who's going to be your shooting guard next year, or who are you going to put as your fifth starter? Mm-hmm. We've already seen that this team, with the starting lineup that started the year, the biggest flaw that came with it was there was just not enough shooting. OG was the only shooter, right? Scotty was hot to start the year. Pascal was cold to start the year. They kind of flipped but maybe we'll just say count them as one collective shooter. That's like two shooters with the whole starting lineup, right? So the only good thing late in the season after all the injuries was that they played a lot of guards, and you saw what this offense looks like with spacing. But yeah, I do feel like, especially if Jakob's back at the starting center, which I do think he will be, the Raptors are 4-27 without him this year, or 4-28, which is just unbelievable. Yeah.
So if Jakob returns, and this is also going to have, you know, Emmanuel quickly full time, where do you see that balance landing between, you know, again, to reference the Wolf on piece, like, hey, pick and roll play has declined around the league because teams are doing more of this dribble handoff stuff, high post stuff. The Raptors, when they hit, Jakob Poeltl is capable of doing some of that, but he didn't hit the assist jump that we, that the three of us had talked about and projected maybe before the season. And Jakob Poeltl is very naturally a pick and roll center. Emmanuel quickly at this stage is more of a pick and roll point guard than the kind of system style point guard. Where do you see that balance coming in if you do have quickly and Jakob full time within a system that, you know, has maybe moved away from their core action? Obviously, you could still run some pick and roll.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they should move away from pick and roll. I think that these are things that you should have the ability to play both. One of the things that Jakob does so well with the rest of the team is he's one of the few guys that actually screens. It's more minor than it's a lot less sexy than spacing out for three, but like he actually screens people. Very few people on this team actually, when they set screens, actually get separation and get contact and create an advantage for the person that they're screening for, create the indecision. So there's that, and also the defensive piece, because I think obviously you can improve upon, you know, that position at center if you wanted to, but you also see the importance of it defensively. And it's like, how much do you want to sacrifice towards this offensive identity while still being able to execute any semblance of a defense?
Well, yeah, because there are how many centers out there are capable of running the DHO stuff, doing keepers out of there, stretching the floor in pop scenarios, and also protecting the rim.
Right.
The list is pretty small, and most of those guys are on MVP ballots.
No, for sure. Exactly, right? So, yeah, I mean, to your point, the Raptors' offense was, I mean, this is a positive because it looked better and the assists were better, but their offensive rating was 112. Like, that's, it's not even much better than last year, which is, but they play totally differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I would arguably more sustainably as well. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be that tricky balance. And I, quite frankly, I don't have an answer as to, like, by the way, their offense rating last year was 115.5. So they actually got worse on offense. Unbelievable. But in any case, like, yeah, I think for this team, there is a clear offensive identity, but you need to find two-way players. Because I think for me, defensively, it's just like, I've been making this point pretty much on every show, but you're not going to guard anybody. You're not going to go anywhere in this league.
Right. And come playoff time, and obviously this team is far away from the playoffs, but the NBA playoffs start tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to see is it's not about which team has the 10 best players. It's about which team has the 8 best players. And it's not about, within those 8, who is the best offensive player. It's who is the best offensive player that you can afford to play because they don't give it back defensively, or vice versa. Who is the best defensive player? Like, it's the old Tony Allen thing, right? And if Tony Allen came along now, he probably just hits more threes, or the defense is still important enough. But if someone is going to give you the Tony Allen treatment, your defense has to be insane. And this
you better be Tony Allen, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is something that Ochai is going to be challenged with, because he shot in the high 20s on threes since he came over to the Raptors. Matisse Thybul has made all defensive teams and basically was not playable in playoff situations because you cramp the defense too much. So and that works both ways. But for the Raptors, they have to find guys who are good enough offensively to stay on the floor defensively, or good enough defensively where you can play them offensively. It's like you can't have Gary run off the court and Ochai run in as the game comes back in transition. That'd be a cool wrinkle for like the in-season tournament or G League overtime or something, but
just fuse and combine it to one player, we actually have our perfect option as who's a fifth starter is going to be. But yeah, you do have to platoon that position right now, which, you know, does not work obviously in this instance. Yeah, honestly, defensively, it's just going to be a challenge. And I would love to hear more from Darko about it. I mean, when he speaks later on this week, I would love to hear his assessments on the season overall. And a lot of this is going to have to come down to individual, you know, player development and improvement on that front, too. Like, I think, you know, when you step back, too, it's like, okay, how do you build a successful basketball team? You probably need one of the best basketball players in the world if you're going to be, you know what I mean? Like, you need, like, probably one or two all-stars, probably an all-NBA type of player. do we have that kind of like franchise player already on the roster? And if not, or even if they only have one, how do you acquire another one? And are they closer to acquire another one based on improving the assets that they had this year, hopefully?
So, I mean, if we listen to your spicy takes from last week that you can see on your social media as well, then yes, Scotty's going to be an all-NBA guy.
That is the dream scenario, for sure.
It is. And look, that would change a lot for this team. If you play out a scenario, I'm not saying he won't get there, but to play out your question, in a scenario where he doesn't get there and quickly an RJ top out as, you know, just below all-star level or whatever.
Like really good starters.
Right. Yeah. So this is kind of the situation that the Raptors were in pre-Kawhi. DeMar and Kyle made all NBA teams, but neither of those guys was a lock for all NBA.
They made it on the fact that the team was so successful.
Yes.
And they were so important to so much winning. Not necessarily because they were top 10 level players.
And you had two of them.
And you did have two
of them. Which is really important. So,
and the East was terrible at that time.
Was? Past tense?
Well, yeah, you're right, actually. Never mind. This, you know what? We're part of the terrible, actually. I can't even say. We are a part of the terrible. Damn.
Oh, wow. So if you don't have that guy, there is, like, you could get lucky in the draft. Sure. You could tank. I think with, you know, I don't think there's a scenario where the Raptors can be like 15 win bad without completely tearing this down and going in another direction that is painful and multiple years. I don't think that's in the cards. So if then what is the next best way? It's, well, okay, you continue to build assets and you continue to, yes, in the draft. Hey, you have the number 6 pick, the number 17 pick, and the number 31 pick. The guys you draft with those picks end up being the second best player, the 10th best player, and the 18th best player in the draft. And you've improved the value of those spots that you had, right? Mm-hmm. You go out and you sign a guy to the biannual exception, which you don't have this year, but for the sake of the example, and he plays like a mid-level exception level player. And then you've got a guy who, again, you have better value. And the Raptors did all of those things on the way up so that when it was time to trade, when a superstar became available, because they didn't have one that they thought was superstar enough in-house, you had a guy who could be the main piece of that trade. You had a good prospect you could attach to it. Yep. You had draft equity that you were okay giving up because you had so many good young players already.
And
so,
it's only one pick, which is one first rounder, which is
And you got Danny
insane.
Green back too.
Yeah. And $10 million.
Five?
Yeah. That should have all gone directly to Masai and Bobby's accounts. Like, yeah. That should have just been a party fund for the front office.
Yeah. That would have been good. So, you know, that's what made the Kawhi trade possible, is having all those things. And then a second layer of that made the Marcus Gasol trade possible. Mm-hmm. You have you developed a starting caliber center who would be attractive in a trade. You had another prospect you could afford to give up in DeLon, who was ready to play rotation minutes but didn't have his thing. You were okay giving up second round picks because, hey, we've shown we can hit on undrafted guys and we've got young players. So, and they paid the cost of that, but that's the model when you don't. If one of your guys is really, really, really good, but he hits a point where he's not the number one guy on a championship contender, is by just being a good front office that continues to find value at every point and outperform every signing, every draft pick, every player development thing, that's how you keep yourself in the mix. And the reality is there aren't 30 best player on a championship teams in the NBA.
Yeah, that's why I asked this question.
Yeah, and there aren't 16, right? Like, even the teams that are going to make the playoffs don't all have them. So you have to, like, yes, that's the best way to do it. That's the ideal way to do it. You draft and develop a guy who becomes that guy. If not, you don't just give up. You have to hit on every other thing all the way down, and that keeps you in a position to be very good before you're great. And that was the Raptors' philosophy and why they kept it together a couple times there. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of patience, and you might not ever get that. Kawhi might not hit the market. Someone tops your offer for it. The shot doesn't go in, but that is the model if you are not one of those teams blessed with a top 7 or 8 player in the world.
Yeah, and I think in that sense, going back to the first question of like, I guess the second question of, do you feel better about the long-term picture of this team? This is where I do feel better about that, because I think as compared to the other scenario, which was you locked up all your other guys and you kept them together and you were pretty much a play-in level team. We saw what that level of that team was. Maybe a slightly better than play-in, but honestly, I don't know. Like, probably not, to be honest. You know, like, the Sixers are in the play-in this year, for example, or the Heat are in the play-in. Like, would you say the Raptors' previous team is better than the Heat? Probably not. Probably close enough in regular season success, but, you know,
they would have been in that mix, 2-8 in the East this year, which is cool, but it's not. Like, you absolutely would not be.
Would they have been in the mix for even up to 2? I just didn't feel like that team that, even if you kept Fred, OG, Pascal, Jakob together and you signed them all expensively, plus Scottie and Gary, like, I still don't feel like, based on what they showed us the last couple years, that was enough to get you to the point where you're you know, head and shoulders past like even Cleveland or like, you know, Indiana right now.
I just meant 2-8 were only separated by 4 games. So that I'm just lumping all of the non-Boston East in together.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but who knows? Maybe quality you top wise. Out somewhere yeah. around Miami where like Miami won 46 right. games. That's a good season, but like...
But you have no prospects. You're not really developing anybody. You don't have extra picks.
Yeah. What's
and
the upward
you don't
mobility?
Have the flexibility. Right. At least now you have at least created a scenario where guys really got to take a step forward. And that's not insignificant. Like, it's not a given. But at least they could have the chance to grow into that, and you have some picks to parlay off. Are they actually going to do it? That's why the front office gets paid a bunch. And you actually got to make it happen at some point. But, you know, at least right now, they needed this revert and a hard reset for this year. And it was painful. Hopefully, just next year is not this painful. But my last question is, what are the odds of the Raptors try to sneak into the top end of next year's draft? Because that's a really good draft.
It is a good draft. And
it's got to be tempting.
It is. And this might be a scenario where, like this year, they see how the first little bit of the year goes. And
you know what?
They,
based on how this front office goes, they'll absolutely do that. You're right.
Yeah. If things are clicking and the team looks like they're going to be a 45-win team, they're not going to cut that team off at the heels and have that team be bad. This front office has just shown us over time they won't do that. If they look like a 35-win team, would this front office lean into maybe being a 28-win team instead? I think they showed us this year and in the Tampa year. Yeah, they have that in them. You know, it's also...
I got one more in me. What's up? The Raptors tanking.
It's also a little hard to know. Uh-huh. Like, this year, 6 teams won 25 games or fewer.
Yeah.
So, like, this has been the most difficult year to tank in the history of the league. Sure. And it's a bad draft. Like, how aggressively bad are teams going to be next year?
Oh, absolutely, man. Like, I feel like this year was pre-tanking for next year almost. Because it doesn't make sense for them to be tanking for the prospects. Like, nobody's looking at this and was like, man, if we can get Donovan Klingon, like, this is our chance.
Yeah.
We have to. Like, no, we're going to lose 28 straight. No, it's not for that. But for next year, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. And this is where, like, thank goodness the NBA doesn't use the WNBA draft lottery system where it's multiple years of record, because we'd have these teams being so ashamedly bad. Man. So anyway, my point with that was just like, how many wins, like how bad is tanking bad next year? Because 25 wins.
And you got to decide that before the season.
If you were going to win fewer than 25 games, you have to decide that before the season.
Yeah.
The Raptors won 25 and everything that possibly could have gone wrong has gone wrong. And they pivoted about a third of the way through the season, and you still only got the 6 last.
Right.
If the league looks more like a normal season, 25 wins maybe has you in the bottom 4. Maybe you can bottom out a little better because there are fewer bad teams. Like, you're not beating Washington and Charlotte and things like that.
But the only team that's going to jump out of the super bad territory is
San Antonio. Yeah.
That's it. And that's not even like a for sure guarantee, although I do think that there's a high chance of it just on Wemby alone. But they might make other roster moves as well. But like everyone else, Washington's still going to be worse.
Yeah.
Detroit's still going to be worse. Charlotte's still going to be Charlotte.
Portland.
Portland is, man, Delano with 0 for 15. That's tough. That's me at the Raptors Republic tournaments collectively.
Honestly, I'm surprised you've never had a game where your three-point shot isn't dropping, so you just get kicked out like Delano did yesterday.
0 for 15, man. Come on, man.
Then I guess the only other team in that mix that you'd say you're probably confident being better is Memphis.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. True. But Memphis, I'm not even counting them because they're already ahead of the Raptors right now in the standings. Mm-hmm. The 15
they won a whopping 27 games.
Buddy. I know Memphis is super pressed looking at the Raptors being like, come on, guys. At least all our guys just got hurt this year, all right?
Yeah.
You guys went ahead and lost 15 in a row. That's right. That's what we do. Anyway, all right, we're going to take a step back. We are going to take this break. We're going to look at some of the quotes that have filtered out of locker room cleanout day and also look ahead to some of the playoff matchups around the NBA. So I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Lou. Continue to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. As mentioned, the Raptors are in the midst of locker room cleanouts. We'll hear a lot more reaction. For people who are listening to the podcast after the fact, obviously this show is recorded from 11 to 12 p.m. Eastern. The majority of the players will probably be speaking after that point, so we want to get into all of them. But we did get our centers to the podium today and wanted to pass along some quotes from there. First off, this is from Jakob Poeltl on Darko's defensive system.
I think the trades that we had in the middle of the season, like, helped his offensive system, like, show its potential a little bit more, because not that we had better or worse players before or after, like, it's just players that wanted to fit that system a little bit more, I guess. And starting over with a completely new group, trying to teach that system and, like, trying to get everybody to like 100% buy into it. I think that's probably why, like, it just looked a little bit better, like the eye test, like, passed a little bit better, like, there was more flow to our offense, stuff like that.
Yeah, this is a similar quote to the one that Kelly Olynyk also gave in regards to Darko's offense. There must be one reporter and they're looking to write about Darko's offense. That's why they're getting asked the same question. But let's hear Kelly's assessment of the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... No, I enjoy that system because, you know, I get to touch the ball a lot. But I think, you know, if you can continue to build in that and grow in that and that chemistry, it's tough to guard because there's not really a play or an action. Like, it's all read and react. And, you know, if they play you this way, you do this. If they play you this way, you do this. I mean, you can go to this side or this side, you know, back and forth. So, you know, it's hard to scout. It's hard to guard. You know, and if you kind of master it and, you know, continue to build that chemistry together, and you're on the same page, you know, it's a thing of beauty and a work of art.
There you go. I was told by super producer Amit Mon that it was Samson Folk who asked those questions. Of course it was Samson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Locker clean out day, the big narrative day. Like, hey, man, your footwork on this big role play. Love, Samson.
Don't act like we're not like that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all nerds.
We just not allowed to be there because we're on air.
I'll be there in less than an hour.
Yeah, you'll be there for Scotty.
I will be there for Scotty, yeah. I haven't seen the guy in a while, you know, so.
Yeah. So to what they said there, Jakob being very diplomatic. It's not better or worse players. Pascal's still my boy, but there is more of a fit there. And then to Kelly's point of, like, it is, if you do it well, it's so hard to prep for because if you don't know what you're going to do yet, right, how can the defense be ready for you? I guess my thought coming out of that for you is, how much of a premium does that then put on when they're going out with these draft picks, with the free agent cap space they could potentially have? Like, is basketball IQ and that feel that is sometimes hard to quantify,
you know when it's not there,
right? So yeah. How high on the list is that for you when you're looking at guys the next little while here?
It's pretty high. I think that, like, it is difficult to develop a player's IQ, you know what I mean? But at the same time, whoever the Raptors end up picking, and obviously whichever picks the Raptors end up retaining and using, those guys are gonna be young enough where they're gonna grow up in this system. I think it also, players are so relative to the system that they grew up in, you know, like Spurs players are Spurs players from back in the day. You know, like, Raptors have a core identity that you continue to see. Like, even you saw DeLon Wright the other game against the Heat. And it was like, oh, yeah, you know, but he learned a lot of that stuff here in Toronto. And so they retain that identity from where they began. And I do feel like Darko, with the players going forward, will be able to do that. Like, I'm really, really high on what he's done developmentally, right? So in any case, yeah, I think you would like to see that. But again, you would also like to see defense as well, and the physical profile to be able to play defense, which I do feel like is a bit lacking from some of the other guys. But yeah, I mean, offensively, that is kind of the highlight Darko did. By the way, one of the nicest things Darko did, and Darko is genuinely a nice guy, like, putting all this aside, like, personality-wise, like, the amount of times Darko just comes by and sits down with you, even if you're just, like, chilling around before the game, just watching, like, whatever, warm up. He'll just come over, say hi, just check in, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to talk to him, you can talk to him. Like,
he came up to us the other week to ask about the media game.
Exactly, right? So he's a really genuinely nice person. So this is not anything about that. It's just, like, again, the product on the court.
And the nice person side is important, right? Like when you know, the first couple games of the year.
Why is it so important relative to the previous coach?
No, I just mean, I think it's important anyway because building and developing is hard. And you're going to, you know, this is why it's such a higher priority thing in G League coaches, right? Like, you hear it a lot more about G League coaches when they come back up and rejoin benches and stuff like that. The more difficult the situation, the more value that there's going to be on that ability to maintain positivity and maintain that energy level, but also, like, maintain a trust with your players that, like, hey, this didn't work tonight, this didn't work this week, but like, you got to trust me that what we're building is going to work eventually. Now that only is, that's only actually true if you're also a good basketball coach, which I think for Darko, you know, signs are there, but we need a different season to evaluate how the micro stuff is going to play out.
Well, because this year, so few games were competitive that you couldn't even really realistically pay attention to that.
Right. And his first season as an NBA head coach, you know, maybe he would have developed over the course of the season, but the games we saw them lose by 3 or 5 early in the season, they were losing by 20 at the end of the season because they weren't playing NBA players.
Even something so minor as, like, there's one game when the Raptors played against the Celtics. It was one of the in-season tournament games. Darko tried to challenge a no-call. And, you know, it was kind of like, you can't even challenge a no call, and we're going to take away a timeout because you did call timeout. That's part of the challenging, is you use a timeout. And that ultimately did cost the Raptors later in that game. The rest of the season, there were no more, like, you know, misplays or misfires with that. And I know that's such a minor thing, but it is realistically an adaptation to go from being an assistant to a head coach at this level for the first time.
Absolutely. And it's so much different than the G League, where, you know, obviously the rules are different, but it's also the personalities are a lot bigger. The players make a lot more money than you and things like that. So learning how to manage all that, like even something as silly as like a player asks, like tells you to challenge something. And it's like, there is the power dynamic is different in the NBA than it is if you're an assistant coach or if you're in the G League or whatever.
In the G League, you're like, man.
By the way, last night they challenged a call in the second quarter last night. So there are
McDaniels jumping on Jimmy Butler.
Do you think there has ever, considering like playoff implications, seeding implications, the implications of a game, what actually happened? Like, do you think there has ever been a lower leverage challenge in the NBA? Like a less meaningful challenge, nothing on the line in the game. The game wasn't close. Right. It turned a shooting foul to a non-shooting foul.
Right. It wasn't on a player that you needed to say fouls on. Yeah. No, you're right. That really was the lowest leverage. Like, we'll never get that time of our lives back for everyone involved. Yeah, you're right.
Anyway, with respect to Darko, and I'm sure we'll talk more Darko tomorrow because Darko is speaking tomorrow and he'll kind of be the topic of the day. But I do think, you know, the tougher the situation and the more patience installing a system requires, getting back to being competitive requires. And again, none of this matters if you aren't also a good coach. Mm-hmm. But the more that the players need to have faith and patience, the more those personality side things do matter.
For sure, for sure. I think he's done a great job of keeping the locker room together. And, you know, in a losing season, like, honestly, I didn't even mean this to take a shot at Nick specifically, but I just know that if the Raptors under Nick Nurse had this type of season, it would not be nearly as pleasant.
No, I mean, we saw it.
We did see it, you're right, in Tampa. Okay, speaking of Nick and other playoff teams, we're going to just quickly go through, because the matchups are set. We'll start with the play-in, of course. That's what everyone has said. Sixers versus Heat in the 7-8 game. It'll be played in Philadelphia. Joel Embiid is back, although there's still some questions about his knee. The Heat, we just saw, obviously, whatever. You can't really notice anything about them playing the Raptors, but who do you got?
I'm going to go with the 76ers here still.
Okay.
Because they do have Joel Embiid, who will be the best player in that game. And they don't have Covington, and it doesn't sound like the Anthony Melton's going to be back. There is going to be a challenge there. But when to
target D'Anthony Melton? Future Raptor D'Anthony Melton, please?
Anyway. I don't know. In games these close, I'm going to lean on who has the best player, who has the home court advantage, and the fact that if the 76ers had Joel Embiid for even a little bit more in this season, they wouldn't be in this play-in situation. Whereas the Heat, I get it. They're the Heat, and this is playoff time, and they're going to do Heat stuff.
This is what they do, baby.
This is what they do. I think the Heat are beating whoever wins out of the Bulls Atlanta Hawks game, but it's I don't know, you have the best player, you're at home, you're the better team on paper and like analytically and things like that. It's just the only advantage the Heat have is they're the Heat.
Yeah. I want to pick the Heat, but I will also pick the Sixers here, mostly because I want to see a Sixers Knicks matchup more than I want to see a Heat Knicks matchup. I just think that like it'll be really fun. Obviously the two cities are, you know, right beside each other and all that kind of stuff, and you know, it'll just be, for New York, they have a lot of size, and they also, you know, to go up against Embiid, we'll see how they combat that portion. By the way, if the Sixers win this, I just realized this will be like the one winner-take-all game that they will actually have won. They're actually really going to lose in Game 7s, so this is technically a Game 7 for them. In any case, Bulls-Hawks, I mean, does anyone care? We're probably going to pick the Bulls.
The Bulls are winning.
Yeah, okay. And then the Bulls are going to lose to the Heat.
Yeah.
Just like last year.
Yeah, I think that's – and that sets up Heat-Celtics.
Yes, which that is, will be very fun.
look, I've said I don't know that I believe the Heat have another run of playoff Heat magic in them. Mm-hmm. But if they do, and if it's against the Celtics in round one, I'm Heat culture from then on.
Oh, after man. Caleb Martin, you better get ready to do what you did last year and I'll play Jaylen Brown. Lakers Pelicans in the other one. Pelicans, I think, have home court on that one. They just played each other, by the way, yesterday, and the Lakers won. But
yeah, the Lakers stomped them. LeBron was 13 first half assists, which I think was a career high and a half.
Right. The Pelicans do just randomly like bottom out. Like, you remember the in-season tournament finale was between these two teams as well. And that team, the Pelicans, really bottom out for that one.
Which
is not the finale, sorry. The
semis.
The West finale, yeah.
Yeah, which is tough. And they also, I mean, they were working Brandon Ingram back in that game, and he had a minutes cap. So who knows what that looks like. They keep doing a weird thing where, like, they move away from JV when JV's not actually the problem.
Right.
I'm having like my own version of JV Hive moments when I'm watching the Pelicans.
JV Hive in big 2024.
I know. What are we doing? I'm having trouble with it though, because they'll go away from JV because like, oh, this lineup's not working or whatever. And like the Larry Nance group does look good, but it's like, okay, but Jonas isn't the problem. Like, that's not why it's not working. You just had four starters come out and play flat. It's not true. JV's fault. Anyway, I'll take the Lakers in this one. I think, you know, they've gotten a semblance of health here at the right time. They have.
By the way, did I see AD maybe have gone hurt a little bit? I was kind of keeping an eye on that game.
I don't think there was much concern about him like missing the play-in game, though.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good, because you would like to see a healthy matchup with these. I think the Lakers do match up uniquely really well with the Pelicans. They're also the veteran-savvy team that I think for the Pelicans, they sometimes get into things where they get in their own way. And there is this weird thing with them where I feel like they get this like big boost off the bench when they play some of their younger guys too, but the starting lineup is still a little bit underwhelming. In any case, like I'd like to see Zion look a lot better than he did last time he played LeBron in a prominent game.
They're also an interesting team with what you were talking about in the last segment about how good are you offensively without giving it back defensively, or how good are you defensively without giving it back offensively, because they have so many good young players off of the bench, but some of them kind of are around that line in a playoff game. Like I love Dyson Daniels.
Sure, yeah.
He's like right there. Like, do you have to cut his minutes back? You need him in that matchup defensively, but you're giving a little back offensively, and then like CJ McCollum is like, he's been better this year defensively, but historically he's been like the version of that at a guard spot. It's like, you're so good offensively, but like point of attack wise, you're in a lot of trouble the other way. The Lakers also just like, they're one of the only teams that can get as big as the Pelicans.
Yeah, that's true. That's usually the big advantage the Pelicans have. And then the last one, Kings versus Warriors, rematch the last season, of course. That one did go to game 7. The Warriors did beat the Kings in that one. It'll be in, I feel like I haven't seen Light the Beam as much this year.
Yeah.
Kind of fell off. Light the Beam might have fell off. It might have been a one season wonder, Light the Beam. Yeah. But the Kings have been sliding. Still, at the same time, we see how spicy it is when they play the Warriors. This is actually a really good matchup.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I can't wait to watch this.
I'm going to light year the beam in this one, and it's Warriors for me.
Okay.
Look, it's the hottest team. It's a team that is heading into the playoffs on the strongest run, and part of that's a criticism of them because they had to get there. But it's the team that's been playing the best basketball at the bottom of the West versus the team that's been playing the worst basketball against the bottom of the West. I don't, like, no offense to the Kings. They lost Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter. Like, that's a really real thing. There is a huge gap in big single game elimination experience here. So the combination of they're a hotter team, they have more experience in these scenarios. It's also just really hard to bet against Steph in a one game scenario.
Yeah. What did he do last time? 50? Game 7? Am I misremembering that?
I don't remember he's Steph. He's going to win the clutch player of the year, etc. He's Steph. I can't bring myself to bet against Steph in a one-off.
Yes, there you go. In an elimination game on the road, Curry submitted the greatest Game 7 scoring performance in NBA history. 50 points. He was 20 of 38 from the floor. That was last year.
Can't pick against it.
I don't think that the Warriors will beat the Pelicans, though. I think the Pelicans are way bigger and way more athletic. But we'll talk about that on a different day. But anyway, that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptors Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe. Please rate and review the program. Thanks to producer Alvin Mon, our board producer Lance Kennedy, Jennifer Olnick, David Sis, Jared Manette, to help me behind the scenes. We'll be back tomorrow.